Awesome. And we are back here with the Technicast. I'm Chris Moffitt, and I'm back with my co-host, Chloe Tuck.
Hey, everybody.
Awesome. And we're here with a new guest today, a good friend of ours here at Technica Editorial, Laura Poole.
Hi, everyone.
She's the copy editing extraordinaire. She's a freelance copy editor. She works mostly with scholarly nonfiction. She also teaches copy editing, offers training workshops, boot camps, and webinars. And she was the founder of Archer Editorial Services, which turns 20 years old this year,
it
correct?
It does.
It's like your 20th
year. Yeah, 20. I always have to wait when I started it. Yeah, 20 years this year.
That's like the China anniversary, right?
For I'm not wedding. Sure. Sounds about right.
Okay. So I think just we should just start with, how did you kind of get started in a career in copy editing? Were you kind of interested in other things, or were you always interested in copy editing, or did it spawn from other?
Well, I joke that I kind of fell into the industry of publishing. When I was a senior in college, I had worked in a science lab for 3 years, sort of as a general purpose gopher. But I knew I wasn't majoring in science, I was majoring in English, and I had no clue what I was going to do when I got out. I went, wow, maybe I should find a relevant work study. All I knew was I wasn't going to go to grad school. So I went, I'm an English and women's studies major, and publishing sounds vaguely related to that. So I called the university press and said, I have work study funds. Can you put me with someone who'll teach me something? Because I don't want to make photocopies all day. And they did. And I sort of fell in love with publishing there and learned about the bare rudiments. I wasn't actually doing any editing there. But I did network with a typesetter, a local typesetter, and because I could type 90 words a minute and knew Quark, they sort of fed me some project, which kept me in beans until I landed a job as another desktop publisher, and then talked my way into a promotion to assistant editor at that job, a position that didn't exist until I talked my way into it. But then they didn't know what to do with me because they'd never had one before. But I decided I really loved editing. I really liked tweaking other people's writing to sound better, and I would do it for my classmates while I was a student. And I just tried to do more of that, and somehow word got around and people started calling me saying, I hear you edit. I went, why, yes, I do. And it took off from there until I was able to quit my job and do it full time.
Awesome. So we mentioned in the beginning the copy editing boot camps that you do, and we were wondering, what are some of the hardest concepts to drill in?
The skills and grammar rules you can teach just about anybody. What's so hard to teach is knowing when not to edit, or when is it too much? When should you query the author? When should you have confidence to just make the change yourself? So some of those gray areas, those intuitive things that you kind of have to have a feel for, and restraint, basically. So one of the hardest things I've had to learn over the years is that it's not always a right or wrong answer. We talk about it spelling correctly, yes, but there are multiple acceptable spellings of a word, depending if you're going for US or UK audience. And grammar is not so cut and dried, and language is always shifting, so the rules you learned in elementary school may not apply anymore. And I'll give you a good example. In the past couple of years, after fighting it for a long time, I finally embraced the singular they. And I realized it has a purpose. It drove me nuts, and I would do all sorts of changing. You can't, if a person wants to do this, they just need to. I'm like, oh, yuck, no, change it. But now I'm like, you know what? It actually serves a legitimate purpose. It's in broader use now, and I can embrace it.
So you kind of already talked a little bit about so you've been in the field, I guess, for 20 years now. You've seen a lot of different changes.
Oh, yes.
What do you kind of see? What big ones have you seen? And do you think we're kind of seeing a resurgence of the importance of copy editing here in the last couple of years? I know some people kind of moved away from it with spell checks and automatic checking through like software programs. Do you see sort of changes within the last couple of years that have necessitated a need for copy editors more?
I certainly have seen some of those changes. It's, spell checker is useful, and so is a program like Perfected or Grammarly that might check for these things. But the kind of things a skilled editor is looking for isn't necessarily just the spelling. It isn't just the grammar. It's the clarity. It's the flow. At a deeper level, they might be looking at the structure of the piece or the coherence of the argument and whether it actually makes the point it's supposed to make. There's some fact-checking involved. So, you know, Spellcheck and Perfected and Lingofy and Grammarly have automated certain routine tasks, but you still need to have a thinking brain reading it and interpreting it and tweaking it better. Because sometimes, you know, I get a phrase and I stumble across it. I'm like, Spellcheck wouldn't help this. Grammar Checker wouldn't help this. So if I can know sort of what the author is trying to say, I can work it out. And maybe say, I think this is what you mean. Let's clarify that to make it clear. Or maybe this would be a better metaphor or simile for what you're trying to say.
Okay. Continuing down that line, do you have any like thoughts or predictions about the future of copy editing or maybe publishing in general? I know that's a huge question there.
It's kind of a huge question. As far as, let me tackle the copy editing first. I like to think people are starting to see the value of it, really see the value of it. Even self-publishing authors are starting to reach out for copy editing because they're realizing it does improve their work. Sadly, a lot of publishers aren't paying for it. Copy editors are hardly ever on staff. Even at newspapers, they're getting the axe. Writers are remaining on staff, and most publishers have project editors, but then copy editors can't get a staff position very reliably. So that's why it's suited for freelancing. There are tools to make it more routine. Maybe we can do more stuff. As far as the future of publishing, I take exception when people say, you know, oh, publishing is dying. I'm like, no, publishing is changing. Print may be dying. We may be eventually going to an all digital reader, but publishing will still exist. It will have to change to keep up with this. And people really do still love a physical book. I do. I still, there are certain authors I will love to buy in hardback because I just love their book and the whole sensory experience of holding a book and reading it. And sometimes I need that old school, not staring at something electronic. I think a lot of people agree with me on that.
I agree. I like getting books from the library. So so you mentioned earlier some of the concepts that were hard to drill into when you're training people on how to copy edit. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, what are some of the common errors that you almost always see with authors when you're actually in the throes of copy editing and you're correcting their work?
Mostly it's just a sense of wordiness that I have to just tighten up, like saying in order to all the time when the word to would be fine. Mm-hmm. I changed that a lot. Just some awkward, a lot of passive subjects, dead subjects with passive verbs. And I'm not totally against the passive voice. It does serve a purpose. And it can be very effective when it's used properly. So it's just more like tweaking. And again, it's not so much right versus wrong. It is not so obvious. But finding that gray area and improving it a little bit to make it clearer, maybe a little more dynamic.
Are there like specific words that you see a lot of people either like misspelling or using inappropriately?
Comprise. Comprise is a big one. People use comprise when they mean compose or is constituted of. And it's a tricky one. It's hard to get right. I always have to remember the crowd comprises the people. So the one thing comprises the lots of little things, and then I have to apply that to how comprise is used, because about 9 times out of 10 is used wrong, if not more frequently. So that's one that catches my eye a lot. Yeah. Descendant. I was used to be convinced it was descendant with an E, and then I realized I was wrong when I looked it up as descendant with an A, and descendant with an E has a slightly different meaning. So they're not exactly the same thing.
That's interesting. This is not a question that I have written down, but speaking of that, do you feel like copy editing is a good way to keep learning something new? How often do you learn new things?
All the time. It's so cool, especially when I have to check a fact. I've for a long time I've said that copy editing, the general nonfiction, I mean, I do scholarly now, but I started in general nonfiction, was a fantastic use of a liberal arts education. Because I'm like, oh, I remember learning about this in my sociology class, and this in one of my history class. Oh, and this from French. So I pulled in a lot of that knowledge, which is very fun. And now I still get to learn some really cool stuff. Or sometimes I'm surprised something, this sounds really cool, and it's not. It's really boring. But one of the more fascinating, I remember this topic. I was editing a lot of economics journals for a major client. And the most fascinating and most readable journal article I ever got to read was a market analysis of the Catholic Counter-Reformation. And it sounds dry as toast, but it was all about how the Catholic Church lost customers So how are they going to analyze the market and what we're going to offer to get the customers back? And it was really quite fascinating.
To kind of go on Chloe's question, have you seen sort of, you've been doing it now for about 20 years. Have you seen like certain words come back into style, certain like, I mean, things that are like maybe from old English or from the past that are now being used in new ways by authors? Or is it kind of...
Not so much like old English, but more like modern online English, like because being used differently. Mm-hmm. We say because science. That's I'm starting to see that in scholarly work, and apparently it's allowed, and it still looks wrong to me. I want to say because of something, but it is allowed, and that seems strange, but I'm starting to get used to it.
Awesome. Changing gears, how do you get yourself into the mood to copy edit? Is it, you know, somewhat ritualistic, like you're putting a certain kind of music on?
Sometimes, you know? Mostly I'm like, okay, I've had my coffee and my daughter's at school and time to make the donuts. This is my job, I gotta sit down and do it. I can't wait for the mood to strike. But sometimes I do have to do extra things to help me get focused and kind of in the zone. I have what I call my editor savant state, and I don't always get there, but it's where I'm in the flow and I'm like, oh, there's a typo and I'll fix this and this. And I'm very fast and I'm very accurate and very thorough, but I can't force it and it doesn't always happen. But sometimes I do listen to music. I have to listen to music without lyrics that I understand, because I can't be humming a song and hearing the lyrics. So I have lullaby versions of some of my favorite bands. No, they're great. The Rockabye Baby albums. I have Coldplay set as lullabies, and the Beatles, and Led Zeppelin sounds great. It's weird, but it sounds really good. And I have Celtic music, and I have orchestral, and I have New Age. So I sometimes listen to those. I also have a noise app that can generate forest and rain sounds, which can help me stay really focused. And sometimes I have to put on dance music. If I'm editing a huge pile of references, it's crank up the dance music. And the running joke is that I'll go, all the single ladies, put a semicolon. All the single ladies, put a comma here. Because I kind of, when I'm editing references, it's just format for the most part. Yeah. And I've got to capitalize this and put a comma here and a colon there. So I have to do something to keep my energy up. And then I can listen to lyrics.
I'm still just like imagining someone playing like Stairway to Heaven to their baby now.
It sounds like better than you think it does.
Okay, so here's just a rant. You've done so much different subject matter. Mm-hmm. What's the craziest thing, I guess, you've ever edited, if you had like a...
Oh, yeah. I've had a crazy thing. I did a lot of work for a Vanity Press before self-publishing came along, where the Vanity Press was you send them a big fat check and your manuscript and you got a book. And they paid really well. I mean, I usually don't get those same page rates now because their stuff was so bad. So the absolute worst was the one written by a guy in, I think, Mississippi or Alabama, who's convinced his cattle were being mutilated by aliens. And he'd had telepathic communication with aliens.
Right.
Who had explained what was going on. And he had seen the aliens at the side. So, yeah, it was just this really bizarre.
Did he write a book, or was this?
Yeah, it was like 70 pages. It was not great. But at that point, when it's that bad or it's that frustrating, I chant to myself, grammar, spelling, punctuation, grammar, spelling, because you have to kind of turn your brain off. Or it will start to hurt a lot by the end of the day.
That's great.
That was a legendary project.
I want to find this book now.
Me too.
It's got to be somewhere.
I have no idea. I blocked it out of my memory after that.
I feel like maybe one more question, then we can do our game. What, I know this is probably hard since you do whole boot camps and everything, but maybe what's one piece of advice that you would give to someone who's starting to copy edit a lot or is interested in doing this?
My advice is to trust your instincts. If you have a feel for the language and you want to edit, just put your hands on some work and try it, because you can do all the learning in the world, all the reading, and all of it will start to make sense once you start to edit. And it's easy to think, oh, I need to complete this training before I start to edit, and I need to read this book before I'm ready. Just try it. Just jump into it. And then once everything you've learned will start to make sense. And I've heard people say, oh, you should just read the Chicago Manual of Style. I never read it like a book, but it won't make sense when you're reading it necessarily, but it will when you start to edit. So I remember the first time someone sent me a book to edit, I went, oh crap, they called my bluff. I was scared to touch it for a week. But you have to have the confidence to start making changes, and then you will feel more confident and trust your instincts. You don't have to memorize a grammar book. You just need to know, that's not quite right. Let me look it up. Let me see if I can figure out how to make it better.
Okay, great. So we have a little game for you here at the end.
Okay.
As you know, every Webster's Dictionary, in an attempt to keep up with the changing vocabulary of the world, updates their dictionary every year to include new words. Some are kind of weird things.
Yep.
So they just recently released a list of the new words that are being added to their online dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought we would ask you, we have a list of words,
okay,
and we thought we would ask you, they're all words that have been added within the last 5 years,
okay,
to the dictionary, and so we were going to ask you, give you a word, and we can give you a definition, we have it from Webster's,
okay,
and we'll ask you whether it was added in 2017 or whether it was already in the dictionary before this year.
All right, I'll give it a try. Now, I know some of the people on the Merriam-Webster team. I'm going to see them in conference, so I better do well or they're going to give me heck for this.
So some of these are ones that you might have come across in some of your writing. Some of them, probably not.
Okay.
So the first one is to throw shade.
That's a recent one. That was this year.
This year? Yeah, that's right. The definition, for those that don't know, it's to express contempt or disrespect for someone publicly, especially by subtle or indirect insults or criticisms.
Yep.
Okay, next one. What about binge watch?
Binge watch. That was also a recent one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you're right. 2017. I think we all know what that means.
Yep.
Binge watch.
Anyone that has a Netflix account knows what binge watch means.
Parks and Rec, binge watch last fall.
Okay, so this is an acronym. It is FOMO, the fear of missing out.
That was an older one.
Right. Was that in 2016?
Oh, 2016. Okay.
Ooh, what about jeggings?
That was earlier. 2016?
2015.
15, okay.
Yeah, you're right. This one, I'm surprised actually was only added recently. It is FLOTUS, the acronym for First Lady of the United States.
Was that this year?
That was added this year.
Ooh. Yeah.
You are perfect. 4 for 4 so far.
Oh, good. Corey's not going to beat me up.
What about photobomb?
That would have been more like 2015.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, she's right.
5 for 5. Okay.
Wow. Okay. Here's one that might have come up across in one of your writings. Town hall. Not like the town hall, in like the town political version.
Yeah, town hall meetings. I'm going to say that's a good bit earlier, isn't it?
It actually was just added this year to their online dictionary.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the shocker one that
we were a little surprised too. We thought for sure that it had been in there since probably like the 2008 election.
I would have said way earlier than that, but okay, wow.
Okay, and I guess in honor of the crazy guy that you wrote the book for, how about truther is the last word?
Truther would have been 2014?
It actually was added this year as
really?
Well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
But that's cool. I know what I was trying to think. When did people start using that term?
But I guess, it just finally, some of them, I guess they're just a little behind, got added recently. So.
Right. Well, the most interesting thing I learned from the dictionary people is that they don't necessarily decide what things go in the dictionary. They always follow the usage. So they have to track how the words are actually used and track down the data on it before they add it to the dictionary or add an adjusted definition.
That's so funny. I'm just imagining people doing all this research
tracking,
out there. Yeah, tracking
how many times throw shade is used on the internet.
It's more like tracking the first documented usage of it.
Oh, okay.
With the new definition.
Okay.
And trying to track at what point did this happen. And I heard a really fascinating talk on this. It was really cool.
So you heard it, people. You need to document when you come up with a new word so that you can get credit for having it in Webster's Dictionary.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you again, Laura. Laura.
My pleasure.
Laura Poole is here. She's Archer Editorial Services. You're also available through copyediting.com.
I am. I'm the co-owner and director of training for copyediting.com, where we support editors with publications and training.
All right. So if you want to get in touch with her, you can go through copyediting.com. Again, it was lovely talking to you.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And remember, in the immortal words of Ray Bradbury, you only fail if you stop writing.